This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the No Nay Never football show and podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week is analyst Tom Whittaker and our resident statistician, Statman Dave. We are looking back at that fantastic 3-0 victory at home to Wigan and ahead to a new midweek fixture away at Hull. It's been some week for the Clarets as they extend their league at the top of the EFL Championship table, edging tantalisingly closer to a return to the Premier League. We're all counting down now the number of games that we need before we can secure promotion. It's looking like it might be Easter weekend, which will be a massive weekend as the Clarets take on Middlesbrough and Sheffield United, who may very well be in a race of their own for an automatic spot. Join us as we look forward to another game. We also have a quick look at a certain transfer embargo, and we just generally delight in everything Claret and Blue. Let's go. So I am, as I mentioned earlier, joined by Tom Whittaker in the Analysis Show studio today. And for those of you listening to this show on the podcast, we will shortly be joined by our resident statistician, Dave Roberts, in the preview show studio, in his preview shoes. Goodness me, Tom, we're already 2 minutes into the football show and I'm tripping over my words. It's a good old-fashioned, none and ever podcast. We're going to dive right in then and have a look at that fantastic win at home against Wigan. I've spent most of today going around telling people we won 4-0 when it was, in fact, 3-0, I think. I was just hoping it was closer to the silly 5-0, 6-0 results that I've been predicting all season. Another home win, Tom. Another dominant, ridiculously dominant display by the Clarets. And free scoring goals for fun. Just looking here at some of the stats from the game. Extends that unbeaten run now to 16 league games. We are getting very close to the 23 undefeated. When can we start singing the undefeated song? What number do you reckon, Tom?
I don't think it scans until you get to 21. That's when you start, I think.
Yeah.
18 doesn't quite work.
Well, you can sing 18 games, can't you? 16 games, 16 games, undefeated. I'm gonna set that off. Let's start like that. So 16 games, unbeaten run. After 36 games, we now sit still top of the table on 80 points. 80 points, goodness me. Still not lost at home all season, which is an incredible stat. We are 13 points clear of Sheffield United in second place. We are 17 points clear of Middlesbrough in third. There are just 10 games left now between today and the end of the Championship season. And Burnley need a maximum 14 points from those 10 games to secure promotion. I suspect, Tom, that it won't need... Well, actually, I don't know whether we will need 14. Given the wobble that Sheffield United are having and the fact that Borough are chasing their tails, I do wonder whether that might keep Sheffield United as on it as they can be and mean that we probably will need the maximum 14 points. You know, if Sheffield United were already 10, 12 points clear of Borough, they might drop off a bit as well. What do you think?
Yeah, well, looking at Sheffield United at the minute, they look really bad.
They do. They're not convincing at all. No.
Yeah. Even the games they're winning, you know, Reading midweek, you know, they're scraping past. I think if it was me, I'd be tempted to say Middlesbrough are more likely to get that second place at the minute. But yeah, that's good for us. Obviously, it means it's less points needed to get the title. So,
yeah
I think it's looking really good on that front.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I think if we say probably five things, I'm just going to bring the table up while I'm talking to you here. This is exceptionally professional football recording, isn't it? It's just like, I don't know this off by heart, listeners. I'm going to have a look now. So the table is five. Yeah, so if we look at Burnley fixtures, I think we need five then, Tom? We're going to say yeah. 14 points. So that would see us, if we beat Hull, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, okay. So that takes us past the Easter weekend. But quite interestingly, what a weekend in terms of championship promotion. Good Friday, Burnley play Middlesbrough away. Easter Monday, Sheffield United at home. Neither one of those sides is going to relish the fact that Burnley are going to have such a key deciding factor in there. So I wonder whether if we beat Middlesbrough on the Good Friday, does that mean we can clinch it at Sheffield United?
I wouldn't be surprised if winning one or both of those games is what gets us over the line.
Yeah,
fine. Yeah, nice way to do it as well, live on Sky against a rival. It's a nice position to be in, to be quibbling. We're not saying, are we going to go up? Are we going to win the league? It's what game are we going to go up?
Isn't it amazing? I know. And none of us, even you, Tom, with tickets, I remember what you were like. You were on such a Debbie Downer at the beginning of the season. We had to give you a bit of a group hug because you were feeling all miserable about the Clarets. So, yeah, it is very nice. I did see a tweet, actually, not so long ago, which made me laugh quite a lot. It was Sky's fixtures over the next couple of months, and Burnley are just on TV all the time. And I think somebody tweeted it and said, oh, nice to see Sky covering all bases to make sure that they capture Burnley's promotion back to the Premier League. I was like, yes, they've literally put everything in that window of the games, like those 5 or 6 games that they think that Burnley can either win the title or get promoted. Every single game is televised, which is rather wonderful for us. So let's go back to the game then. Tom, 2 goals for Nathan Teller, taking his tally to 16 for the season, and 1 for Lyle Foster, which I'm very happy about. We'll come on to him in a minute. First and foremost, I don't think many of us predicted Nathan Teller to be our goal scorer, leading goal scorer by the end of the season, did we?
No, I think when he was brought in, you think of him as a pacey winger, and it was obviously a position we were quite light in. You know, quite a few seasons we've been light, aren't we, on that?
Not anymore.
Quite literally had no wingers, didn't we? And then, like you say, now we seem to have nothing but wingers. But, yeah, I had in my head. I suppose, really, as a club, we've not seen that many wide players who aren't the kind of beat your fullback and cross the ball. Obviously, that's the job that a lot of them had under Dyche. And obviously, if you go back to people like Glenn Little, and there were those kind of players. And obviously, the more modern wingers are the kind that sort of, you know, you think of someone like Mo Salah, who's normally playing on the left-hand side, but actually what he's doing is going inside and scoring goals. And obviously, Teller's in that kind of modern mould, and he's really good at it. Scoring all kinds of goals, you know, long-range tap-ins. Scored 2 with his head, which that's another one that you think, me and my dad
that's
are talking about. I think he scored like 4 or 5 with his head this season, which is, you wouldn't have thought that at all either.
It's only a little one.
Yeah, that's it. And he's and you know, you don't have him as someone who's gonna out jump a, you know, a centre half. So yeah, all kinds of goals. Some of these games as well, he's got something that some of our other players don't have. It's that ability to play on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And in the kind of classic centre forward style, which I think the strikers we've got at the club aren't really those kind of players. Maybe Foster or Obafemi if they got a bit more of a run, but certainly not Barnes or Rodriguez with the ages they are. So, yeah, it gives us another dimension, and his finishing's really good as well.
Yeah, definitely. I've been really impressed with him. I do hope we keep him next season. I'm kind of a bit gutted about Southampton clawing themselves a little bit closer to survival, because it might mean that they might get to stay. But I don't think Southampton are going to massively improve next season, whereas you'd think he'd want to stay with his current squad, wouldn't he, and play for Vincent Kompany. Going back to what we were saying before, I can't believe that we're actually talking about situations where players would rather play for us than somebody else. That's also never happened to us in about a decade. Sticking with strikers then, how important was it for Lyle Foster to not only get off the mark, but to do it in an incredibly impressive fashion? Fantastic little flick on from Obafemi to give him a really great strike. It wasn't just a scuffed over the line, you know, what a relief it's finally gone in. He took it really well.
Yeah, he did. I think everyone could feel that he really needed that goal. There was a lot of, especially after the Fleetwood game, I think, where he got a rare start and he didn't look very impressive. And you started hearing more and more people questioning, you know, if we bought a dud here, is he going to fit in? I thought he looked at Blackpool as well. You know, he didn't even get off the bench for that game. So then you think, does company trust him? But I thought he looked really sharp. He was quite unlucky. There was a shot he had just before where he's got his back to goal and he just flicks it up and hits it on the turn, just past the post.
Oh, yes.
And he looked like he was confident. So they've obviously done, you know, the team and the manager have obviously done well to keep his confidence high. You know, he's not afraid to try something. And then, like you say, the finish was absolutely fantastic. Obafemi does well to keep it alive, but he's still got so much to do from that angle. And like you say, it's not just I'm sure he would have taken a scruffy little tapping, but it's not that at all. It's an absolutely fantastic first time volley finish. Keeper's got no chance. And you could tell everyone in the stadium was really chuffed for him. His teammates really chuffed for him. And it's going to do his confidence the world of good. And it'll just calm people down now. You know, it's before the talk was, oh, we spent £8 million on this guy. But the narrative changes a lot when you've scored a goal, I think. And now it's, you know, he's one of the many goal scoring contributors to a title winning season, hopefully.
That's a point. Another new goal scorer. So is that number 17?
Club record, I think, for the most.
Most goals, different goal scorers in a season. Wow. I'll ask Statman Dave when we get back to this, but I think that might be 17 for the season. I feel like the last one was when Obafemi scored. I'm sure I saw a tweet that said, like, goal scorer number 16 for the season. That feels about right. We'll fact check that. I don't need to fact check that for your listeners because probably most of you know that more than I do. But there you go. This is a day for us not getting our stats together before we came on air. But, you know, what else do you expect from us? It's no and ever. It's rogue charm. At the other end of the pitch, Tom, two incredibly important and surprising saves that Muric had to make from Wigan. One as a result of a point-blank shot and another one as a rare mistake from Ekdal as well. I was particularly impressed with that, given that for so many games this season, Muric has literally had nothing to do, to the point that we see him at the halfway line playing a centre midfield role because he's literally, it's just from the bounce, because he's literally bored. So for him to be that alert and to be able to pull out those saves when he had nothing else to do, when a keeper does that, that always really impresses me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you say, it's not just been that game where it was quiet. It's the last few games, I think we've conceded 3 in the last 10, but I can't think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Games where he's had to make loads of saves in those 10 games. I don't think Blackpool or Huddersfield have a shot on target. So, as you say, and it's a game where, you know, I think we looked pretty comfortable once we went in front. You didn't think Wigan were going to get back into it. And then all of a sudden, this header out of nowhere, it's a really good strong hand to palm it away. And then the second save, it was, and this is high praise for Muric, it was Nick Pope-esque, I thought.
Aww.
His angles were spot on. I remember with Nick Pope, it always used to be a case where an opposition striker would be 3 1-on-1, and he always used to be really confident that he was going to save it.
Yeah.
You know, even though the odds are against him. And it felt like that with Muric. He just looked, I mean, he's so unflappable anyway, so he's so calm, but he got his angle spot on. He didn't give Fletcher anywhere to aim at, and obviously stood up and again made a brilliant save, and that's took us in 1-0. It gave us a bit of a kick up the arse. We'll come out and score straight away in the second half, and then the game's put to bed. So he deserves a massive amount of credit.
The game just follows the same blueprint this season for me. It's like Burnley do what we've done for a long time, but just in a different way. We keep the game tight in the first half. We don't often, unless the opportunity really presents itself, this Burnley side, they don't go out for the kill. They do pass it around a lot. They spend the first half just maintaining possession, but making the other side chase around for it. The amount of times, I've said this on the podcast before, that teams have gone in absolutely knackered at half time because they've been chasing shadows and emotionally drained and just not wanting to come out for the second half. The second half, we've not really broken into a sweat yet, and bang, 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 we just ruthlessly destroy them. So it came as no surprise to see that we were once again very ruthless in that second half. Feel a bit for Wigan at the moment. I know they're not Lancashire anymore. I know that there is an element of geographic local rivalry there. Troubles on and off the pitch for Wigan. A reminder, I think, to us, even though we're having the season that we are, that not all is well in all aspects of the football pyramid, and there are some teams out there struggling. you know, on the pitch, reduced to 10 men, facing a relentless Burnley side. And, you know, for the fourth, I think it's the fourth time this season, they've not been paid again this season. Considering that we ourselves in the last 24 hours had a minor wobble when we saw a headline about an EFL-imposed transfer embargo, it's just quite humbling sometimes to remind ourselves that there is a world outside the Premier League big boys and any of us could get dragged into it at any time.
Yeah, it is very much, you know, there, but for the grace of God, you know, Burnley, all these kind of teams, Burnley, Wigan, Blackburn, Preston, we're all kind of similar sized clubs, aren't we, really? Yeah. And we've had the benefit of being really well managed for the last decade or so. And obviously Wigan, after having so long with the chairman who put a lot of money in and out, kind of on the other end of the spectrum and lurching from one crisis to another. And yeah, I mean, obviously they got spanked on Saturday. They're going to get relegated, but you know, you can say that as long as you've got a club to support, and a bad defeat, a relegation, it pales in comparison to the thought that, you know, you might not have a club, and obviously we've seen that too often recently in the last few years. So yeah, my heart does go out to them. I hope they do get it sorted, and I hope that that whatever division they're in next season, they're doing it on a stable footing,
and that they are actually still there in order to do it as well. I think all of us just want every club to remain in the Football League and just given a chance to survive. Probably interesting one. We didn't really cover it on the podcast. I think we had a break when it came out, but perhaps the government's football regulator that comes in will help towards this sort of management in terms of stopping the football world running away with itself and self-managing those interests from within. So, yes, any Wigan fans out there who are watching, our best wishes do go to you, and we do genuinely hope that you get that sorted. Moving on, Thomas, we have another fixture. It's another midweek one. We all got very excited last week because we actually got the week off because there was no midweek game. It felt very, very nice. We did try and get away with doing one podcast this week, listeners, but producer Matt was having none of it and made me and Tom show up for work today and do you a whole preview. It's a Wednesday fixture, Wednesday the 15th of March. It's a 7:45 kickoff. It is live on the red button, I think, for those of you who can't make the trip over to Hull. Before we get on to the game itself, we need to do a little bit of housekeeping. We left you with a quiz question at the end of our Wigan preview, and that quiz question was, Wigan Athletic's current captain is a former Clarets defender in the form of Tendai Dirikwa, who only ever scored one goal in a competitive match during his time with Burnley. Which team was it against? Now, we did have a couple of correct answers here. We had MJP78UTC on Twitter. But we also had known and ever teams, Tom and Charlotte, who also got this right. So, Tom, why don't you give us what the answer was, please?
Yeah, I used to be quite good at the quiz, and it's been a long time since I got one, so I was desperate to put my hand up. It was Reading. Remember it well. I think it was one of the only home defeats we had that season, funnily enough. I think he scored in, but yeah, Reading. Oh, yeah. I was there. I do remember that game.
Excellent. It was indeed Reading. So well done to everybody who got that right. And if you want to have another crack at the next quiz question, you just need to hang around until the end of the show, and Dave will leave you with something else for this week's midweek homework. We're going to head over now to the preview show studio, and we're going to hand over to Dave Roberts, our resident statistician, who's going to give us the Championship head-to-head.
23 of our 32 seasons in the same league as Hull City have been in the second tier. So with 22 passed away matches to look back on, we'd better get on and give you an overview without any further delay. Burnley failed to win on any of the 8 visits to play second tier matches at Hull City prior to the First World War, losing 5 and drawing 3. The first of these was in September 1905 at the Circle. This was a temporary ground, which usually hosted cricket matches, but the match finished 1-1. All of our remaining matches in Hull prior to the Second World War were played at Anlaby Road. Burnley's next sequence of away matches at this level in the 1930s provided a hat-trick of away wins in consecutive seasons between 1933-34 and 1935-36. Cecil Smith scored the only goal in a 1-0 win in May 1934. And then in November 1934, we were 3-1 winners thanks to a first-half hat-trick from George Brown. The third of that run of three away wins was in January 1936, when Stephen Kilcar scored both of the Claret's goals in a 2-1 victory. Our next meeting at this level was at Boothbury Park and took place in October 1971. But the result was the same, as Burnley were 2-1 winners thanks to goals from Paul Fletcher and Leighton James. Leighton James also scored the Burnley goal when the two teams met in Hull again in September 1972. Phil Holmes scored the opener for the home side, but it was Leighton James who put away the equaliser in the 84th minute. The Clarets then suffered a heavy 4-1 defeat in March 1977 as Malcolm Lord contributed a hat-trick for the home side. But 12 months later the tables were turned as Burnley won 3-1 in March 1978 with goals from Paul Fletcher, Billy Ingham and a Peter Noble penalty. There are just 7 matches left on our list and all of them took place this millennium. And we're all at the new Hull City Stadium, which has had a variety of sponsors associated with it and was opened in 2002. We didn't win any of the first 3 of those, as we drew 0-0 in April 2006, and that was followed by a 2-0 away defeat in December 2006. Future Claret Dean Marnie scored Hull City's opener in that match in the 6th minute. Our next visit was in March 2008, and the scoreline was another 2-0 defeat, with Burnley conceding twice in the first half. But the match was probably more memorable for a succession of 4 red cards in just 6 second-half minutes. Referee Mike Riley sent off Caleb Folan for an off-the-ball incident with Stephen Caldwell, who was also booked. He then committed another foul less than a minute later and was promptly dismissed for a second yellow. Just 5 minutes after that, a tussle between JJ Okocha and Joey Goodjohnson resulted in a straight red for the Hull man and a second yellow for Goodjohnson, meaning that the rest of the match would be 9-9, but there were no further goals. We followed up an emphatic 4-1 away win at Hull in the Premier League in April 2010 with a hat-trick of away wins in the Championship in the next 3 seasons, starting with a 1-0 win in March 2011, in which loanee Nathan Delfonso scored the only goal of the game. 5 goals were scored in the match in November 2011, but we're going to keep details of that game back for our memory match feature. And then in November 2012, Dean Marnie, who was now in Burnley colours, scored against his old club, as Burnley came away with another 1-0 win. Our last visit to Hull in the Championship was on Boxing Day 2015 and was an uncharacteristic 3-0 defeat. However, Sean Dyche's side used the disappointment of that defeat as an impetus to go 23 unbeaten for the remainder of the season and gain automatic promotion as champions. So after a poor start, Burnley's record in away second-tier matches at Hull has improved and reads as follows. Played 22, won 8, drawn 5 and lost 9, with 26 goals for and 36 against.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Moving on, regular listeners will, of course, know that we like to preview our opposition celebrity fans. It's just a little bit of fun. We have a league table of what we score our celebrity fan points on. Some have been easier than others. And we had a little bit of furore last week because Dave Roberts bent his usual very rigid rules and allowed a great big giant pie to come on the preview show. So, okay, let's see what nuggets he has for us today. Before we get on to Dave's shortlist, Tom, did you know of any Hull fans off the top of your head, celebrity fans?
No, none sprang to mind. I did wonder if maybe like a cream-coloured postbox again or something based on
He has. He's definitely given us some really strict rules on celebrity fans. He says that anybody who's a chairman or owns the club are not allowed to be a fan. So Delia's out, and we had that whole debate about Elton John. They also need to be living. So apparently a pulse is a prerequisite for getting into the shortlist. But despite that, great big giant mascot pies are allowed. So do you know what, listeners? I give up with Dave. Dave is just rogue and he can do whatever he wants because we love him and he can just set his own rules. Let's see what he's picked for us for Hull City's most famous celebrity fans. Coming in at number one, John Prescott, Lord, former Hull MP and Deputy Prime Minister. We all know who he is. And number two, Tom Courtenay, who's a veteran actor on film, TV and the stage, appeared in Billy Liar and Dr. Zhivago. That might be a little bit before our time, Tom. Sunita, the singer and TV personality. Good grief, where has this gone this week? At number four, Rob Palmer, the football commentator, who also follows Dave on Twitter, apparently, which may be a first for this feature. You're always going to, if you could follow Dave on Twitter, you're always going to make it into his shortlists. Coming in at number, what are we on? Number five, Sarah Beeny, broadcaster and property guru. I've just been watching her programme, Sarah Beeny Escapes to the Country. So it's not Escape to the Chateau, that's all I will say. And finally, at number six, Roy North, an actor, presenter, Mr. Roy, who is Basil Brush's companion. That is some list, Tom. How are you rating that out of 10, please?
I think, unlike some of the previous weeks, I've actually heard of most of those, which is a bonus.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't like Dave to get unfollowed on Twitter by Rob Palmer. So for that reason, I'll give it a solid six.
Solid six. Do you know what? I'm going to moderate that at a six because that is exactly where I thought that was going as well. I take issue with the inclusion of Sunita. I'm going to fact check him on that one because that, to me, feels... No, I just don't think that's going to be in there. But you know, I'll question him. I'll wait until he's done his preview show for the next game before I before I count him on. I don't want him to take. I don't want him to go on strike. There's enough strike action going on. Let's not have Dave Roberts on strike as well. But yeah, there you go. Hull, you are coming in at 6 out of 10 for your famous celebrity fans, and it's back over now to the preview show studio for Dave, who's going to give us this week's memory match.
This week's memory match took place on the 26th of November 2011 and must surely rank as one of the most impressive Burnley comebacks in an away game in recent times. Eddie Howe's Clarets faced a Hull City side which had Nick Barmby as caretaker manager, following the departure of Nigel Pearson earlier that month. Barmby was still on the playing staff at this time, although he did not play in this match. The home side got off to a good start and were 1-0 up after just 11 minutes when Matty Fryett finished with a close-range shot past Lee Grant. It remained 1-0 at the break, but it was that man again, Matty Fryett, who advanced into the box and beat Lee Grant with a powerful angle shot, although the Burnley keeper should really have stopped it. With only 12 minutes remaining, Burnley still trailed by 2 goals, but this was when the Clarets' comeback began. A long free kick into the box eventually fell to Ross Wallace, who crossed for David Edgar to finish with a close-range header to pull one back. And Burnley were level just 4 minutes later, as a long throw-in found substitute Sam Vokes, who headed the ball on for David Edgar, to hook in an equaliser. Both Burnley goals had come from a most unlikely source, but the 747 travelling Burnley fans didn't care and were delighted that we had seemingly earned a draw and a point. But the best was yet to come. In the 3rd minute of added time, Burnley skipper Chris McCann played the ball to Jay Rodriguez, who, from just inside the box, finished with a perfectly placed low shot into the far side of the net for a late, late winner. A defeat would have seen Burnley drop into the bottom three, but the unlikely comeback win ensured that we climbed up to 16th to begin a move up the table in the right direction.
And your opposition view this week is provided by Two Hull and Back podcast. Here's what they had to say ahead of this week's fixture.
Hi there, it's Ant from the Two Hull and Back podcast, and thanks for having me on. Hull City season's been a weird one, really. First half of the season under Shota Ravalazzi, and Obviously, a huge turnaround of players in the summer. We never really got going. We had a huge injury list. We were even signing players that were injured. And despite starting okay, I think we were joint top of the league after the first four or five games, winning our first three at home and drawing away, including, obviously, at Turf Moor. And then a couple of injuries to key players like Alayar and Tete, it all started to go downhill. You know, the squad just looked disorganised. Every game we was getting beat 2 or 3 nil easily, conceding set pieces, not really offering much threat whatsoever, not really having any shots on target. It was very worrying and you know, we were in a relegation fight. But since Rosini has come in, phenomenal turnaround. We had the worst division in defence in the league. Under Avaladze, I think, conceding 35, 37 goals or something like that in 18 games. And since Rosini has come in, we've got the third best defence in the league. You know, he's made us hard to beat. We're a lot more organised. Try and play out from the back. You know, the players tend to put themselves on the line a bit more. We're throwing ourselves in the way of shots. And the team just look invigorated and re-energised, which has been good. Obviously, we've reintroduced Sean McLaughlin into the back four, who fans have been crying out for the beginning of the season. And he's really helped. Yeah, it's been a very weird season. You know, if we'd have started with Rosini, I think we've only lost four times in the 19 games he's been in charge. But if we'd have started the season with him, you know, we could maybe have been challenging the top six. But it makes us excited for next season, I suppose, and to what we can do with some players that he brings in summer. Because at the minute, you know, he's showing his tactical nous. He's very honest about performances. He's showing his man management skills. He's showing his varied variation in tactics. And he's getting us through games. He's been a very good coach. I think our Achilles heel is obviously putting the ball in the back of the net, but he had some job to try and turn around our defensive frailties, and he's done that, so credit to him. I think Wednesday night, it's a bit of a free hit, isn't it? Pretty much every side in the Championship will say the same thing. Burnley are just done literally the next league above us, aren't they? They're just a phenomenal team, play a phenomenal way, create so many chances that even if you put 10% of your chances away, you've scored 3 goals, kind of thing. So I'm hoping that, you know, defensively we can continue to be strong and resolute and maybe get a bit of a smash and grab, set-piece goal, have something to hold on to, kind of thing. But we'll definitely go into the game trying to be positive. We're 7 unbeaten at home. You know, we're kind of mid-table, can't go up, can't go down. So it's one of those free-hit games where there's no real pressure. We can go on and try and show what we can do, look to frustrate Burnley and take a chance or two. Oh, and score prediction. I will go for a 2-1 Burnley win. Yeah, thank you.
Let's hit you with some referee information then, please. Tim Robinson of Bognor Regis has been somewhat of a lucky omen for Burnley. This will be the fifth Burnley match he has taken charge of, and the Clarence have won all of the other four. We like that stat. The first two were prior to this season and resulted in home victories against Rotherham United, which was in 2016, and Newcastle in 2019. The latter was the first time he had been appointed to take charge of a Premier League match. Tim Robinson's other two Burnley matches were both away wins from the current season and both finished 4-2 to the Clarets. We beat Sunderland by that scoreline in the league last October and repeated it at Bournemouth in the FA Cup in January. No red cards were shown during any of the previous occasions he has refereed our matches. Dave, he likes his referee stats, and he does. You can always tell when he gives, when he's happy with the referee, because they get a very nice write-up. You always tell them there's a bit of an undercurrent with Dave. It's not going to be an easy game away at Hull. A bit of a funny one, this one. They've literally got nothing to play for. They are nowhere near the relegation battle. Actually, I think the bottom two, three will be the ones that do go down. They're not in contention for the playoffs at all. About as mid-table as you can get. They do score quite a lot of goals, Dave. Tom. 41 goals this season. I'm calling the preview show the preview shoe, and Tom is Dave. That's your quiz question this week, listeners, to unravel the enigma that is this podcast. Mid-table, they've scored 41 goals, which, interestingly, is quite similar to some of the playoff teams. So some of the teams like Luton's, etc., who are very much in the mix for top six, have scored 42, 43, 44 goals. So that's quite a lot for a team that's only finished mid-table. Their problem is conceding. They've actually conceded 49, which is quite high. Bearing all that in mind, Tom, what are we expecting? They're just playing for pride. Do you think that it will be stubborn? Do you think it will be easy? What do you think?
I think I won't pretend to be an expert on Hull, but from what I've seen of them this season, I think Rosinia looks like he's got the makings of a decent manager.
Yeah, agree.
I think they had a good upturn when he came in. And I think, like you say, I think they've pulled themselves out of the relegation battle and now they're in mid-table. The season's kind of over for them. So the form seems to have dropped off a bit in recent weeks. And I'm thinking they're going to be a team who's, you know, a lot of the teams we've played recently are 10 men behind the ball and just play for a 0-0. They don't need to do that because they don't desperately need the points for anything in particular. I think Rosinia is a manager who wants to play like good passing football, and I think that'll suit us, to be honest. So I'm hoping that kind of style plays into our hands a little bit. They won't be too defensive, because although we have pretty much got the league and that sewn up, we do want the points towards it. Perhaps they're even thinking about breaking this record. So I think our need's greater than theirs. We've got a better side. So I'm expecting us to go there and get 3 points.
Are you expecting a lot of goals, or are you expecting it to be an unusual one-goal win?
I think you mentioned earlier about how we kind of slow the game down and control it a little bit, and it's not always gung-ho. And I think with it being a midweek game, and we've got obviously a big game on Saturday to look forward to in the FA Cup,
yeah,
I think the thinking will be get the points. But if we go 1-2-0 up, I think it'll be a case of just stroking it around, keeping the ball and just keeping it tight at the back and not letting them get too many chances. So I don't see us scoring 4 or 5. I think it'll be a nice controlled performance, and hopefully maybe something like a 2-0 win, just comfortable and making sure everyone's fretting fish. You've infected me now. Saturday.
We've just given Matt the title of this week's podcast for sure. I think it's because I'm really excited. I'm really pumped up, and we get into the business end of the season and I'm all giddy, and I talk really quickly when I get giddy, which is quite unfortunate for a podcast host because I'm talking at a million miles an hour and then I trip over my words because my mouth is running quicker than my brain is. I'm going to take 2-0 as your prediction. I'm going to match that. That's exactly what I thought the prediction was going to be this week. Bearing in mind that we do have the big game at the weekend and it is a midweek game and it is the end of the season and we're all very, very tired. Does he have any temptation to rotate any of the squad, or does he just stick with the same starting 11 and look to bring the second strike force of Obafemi and Foster on at some point?
I think if it was me, I think I'd quite like to rest players for the FA Cup game. Not every season we get that far, and we have got the lead. Let's be realistic, we have got the lead title sewn up. If we lose this game,
yes, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we could lose the next four and we'd still be in pole position to win it, you know. So that I if it was me, I'd be tempted just to rest a few. You know, I wouldn't make 11 changes, but like you said, maybe give Foster or Obafemi a start. Rest Teller, I think, for sure. Rest Sorori, maybe. Maybe even rest Cullen and play Cork. But I don't know if Company will do that. I think it'll probably be more a case of play the best team, try and get the game sewn up within an hour or so, and then start rotating, which is, like, you know, as we have done in some of the previous home games. So, I don't think he'll rest that many, but I'm hoping that he does, to be honest. That I would quite like us to put our eggs in the Man City basket this week.
Yeah, me too. I think that's just a really exciting fixture. And like I say, even though we were all a little bit deflated when we got the worst possible draw we could have done when we got through to the quarterfinal, it is a quarterfinal. And for most of it, it's the first time we've ever seen the Clarets, not most of us actually, for a lot of us, it's the first time we've seen the Clarets that far in the FA Cup. You know me, every single season I say how much I would love a cup run. I agree. It'd be nice to see us go and compete. And I think also as well, all eyes are going to be on this game, particularly with Pep opening his mouth and saying that Vincent Kompany will manage City one day. It's like, are you kidding me? Shut up. Like, we don't need that added pressure. And if we've got a couple of key players out injured anyway, so it would have been nice if we'd have had Benson, Zorori, Brownhill, Cork, Cullen, you know, those, and with Barnes and Teller up front, it would have just been nice to really put a full strength out. Would have been great. Actually, I don't know. Would Taylor Howard-Bellis been allowed to play? Not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. But yeah, just irrespective of all of that, I just would like us to go and give a good showing so that people who have just not paid any attention to the championship this season go, God, is the championship really crap? Like, how have they got to the top of the championship? So we'll look at that another day. Before we move on, we're going to leave you with Dave's miscellaneous stat of the week. He has once again delved deep into those pockets of his and pulled out this little nugget for you. The 3-0 win over Wigan took our tally of goals against the Latics to 8 for the season on the back of the 5-1 away win in August. This was the first time that Burnley had scored 8 or more goals in the league against any opponent in a single season since the turn of the millennium. You have to go back to the 97-98 season when Chris Waddle was the manager. For the last time, Burnley managed 8 or more league goals against a single team in a single campaign. We lost 3-1 at York City, but won the reverse fixture 7-2, taking our tally to 8. But we had to wait another 25 years to match this feat. There you go. What a stat. We don't have an update from the Known and Ever FPL this week because we're still in the middle of game week 27. So we will look to bring you another update later on. But instead, we're going to leave this week's show with a quiz question, which is brought to you as follows. Earlier on, we mentioned that Burnley had scored 8 goals against one team in the same league season, with Wigan Athletic becoming the first team to experience this against Burnley since York City in 1997-98. Can you tell us the last team to concede an aggregate of 10 or more league goals against Burnley in a league season? Who were our opponents and what was the season? Gosh, that's a bit of a stinker. I don't think I'd even know where to start. You can leave a comment in our YouTube channel underneath this video. You can tweet us at Known and Ever. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Or for those of you who like to write, you can email us at previewshow@knownandever.net. I do like it when we get our emails. They are great emails. Oh, actually, I've just realised, speaking of emails, I feel like I might have inadvertently forgotten to give somebody a quiz question. I feel like we got an email with somebody giving the quiz question. We did. It isn't right. Sorry, Stuart Parkinson sent us an email asking for the answer, and it wasn't right. Phew. That would have been massively awkward if I'd have forgotten him. That is all we have time for this show. Thank you for sticking with us. We've looked back at that amazing win against Wigan and we are looking ahead to another midweek fixture in the EFL against Hull. It is getting tantalisingly closer, listeners. In just a few short weeks, we will be having a celebration on the football show and the podcast celebrating Burnley's return to the Premier League. And hopefully the lifting of a silly transfer embargo. But that's one for another day. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the Known and Ever Football Show and podcast. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting knownandever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are as ever proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.